Hello, cinephiles, and welcome to Indie Outlook, the show that sheds light on must-see cinema from the Windy City and around the globe. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm of HollywoodChicago.com. Today, I'm joined by actress Alison Torum. At age 19, she was chosen by the Chicago Tribune as one of the 10 most promising young talents on the Windy City stage, and she has gone on to fulfill that promise in spades. Alison was nominated for a Jeff Award for Best Actress for her lead role in the Looking Glass Theater Company's production of David Schwimmer's Trust, and she also earned praise for her riveting turn as a young woman of faith in Stephen Cohen's magnificent indie The Wise Kids, which opened the 2011 Reeling Film Festival. So welcome to the show, Alison.
Thank you.
And I just have to ask, because it seems like you were in high school when you were starting some of your, you know, professional theater career, like in the city. And was it ever a goal of yours when you were in high school to say, I want to try some theater that's different from just like the drama club that's being offered?
No, I just kind of had that like very childish, glamorous idea of like being a star, I guess.
Sure.
Like when I was a sophomore, my English teacher, on the first day of school, he told us to write down on one piece of paper like a symbol or something of what you wanted to be, and then like fold it up and like never look at it again. But obviously, I looked at it at the end of the year when he gave it back to us, and I just saw that it like had a star written on it, and so I don't know, I had my eye on the prize or whatever. But
sure,
since then I've kind of been like, yeah, that's a kind of cutesy way to look at it, but it's
sure,
you know.
Well, absolutely, because I was involved in, you know, high school drama. I mean, that was just like your one artistic outlet in high school. And I was talking to your Wise Kids co-star Tyler Ross, and he said that it served a similar function in both of our lives, where it's like, if you're a bit antisocial, if you're a bit shy, you're not really comfortable in your skin, like the stage gives you a place that to feel at home. It was that similar for
it,
you at
the it age. Wasn't in that way. I've never been shy. But when I was a kid, there was this place called the Entertainment Project, and that's when I first got on stage doing anything in front of audiences or something. And that was really fun because I think it was the first time that I was like I'd always wanted the chance to be on stage and like entertain, but that was the first time I like had to do it.
Exactly.
So my parents like paid a bunch of money and like whatever, and that place has since.
Sure.
Very awkward. But I'm very grateful for those opportunities because, like, I played Zidler in Moulin Rouge, and I was like...
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And you can really just go all out on something.
And that was one of the first times I learned that in theater, like, it is not a movie. Like, one time the lights just totally shut down after, like, in the middle of my big, like, dramatic, hey, welcome to Moulin Rouge. Yeah. And then we, like, had to do it again, like, in front of everyone on the opening night, which was also the same, like, 2 days before closing and, you know, all that stuff. So it was just amazing. Like, the rush that you get from being on stage, I think that's one of the main things that I've always been, like, chasing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, is there a certain thing, I mean, has there ever been a character that you've been particularly... you know, attracted to or particularly interested in? It's like, I really want to get to the meat of this character, or someone that you really connected with personally.
Looking back on roles is always different than when you're doing them, at least for me so far.
Mm-hmm.
But in the boys' room at Victory Gardens a while ago, I'm not keeping track of time,
sure,
I guess, but like a while ago, we did a reading of that at Steppenwolf with Marianne Thebus, who was cast in it, and two other actors who were not cast in it at Victory Gardens. We had Steve Key and Joe Dempsey play the father and the uncle. And Meg Falcon was also, she's a Chicago actress. Hmm. She's awesome. She's actually just closing a show at Chicago Dramatists right now, which is very riveting and, wow, made me, like, bawl my eyes out.
Oh,
but,
nice.
But yeah, so she was in there was a character, Joel Drake Johnson, who's the author of that play, he had a part for the mother, and I was playing the daughter, obviously. And that part was taken out, and sort of, like, all the meat that the mother had in that role was just, like, put onto my character, and it was super cool. And I loved the play even before that happened. I was just like, this is awesome. Like,
sure.
I just was like, this is one of my favorite plays ever. I love it. So then we got to do it at Victory Gardens on, like, the main stage and everything. And, like, Roanne, who was my character, like, all the intensity that the mom had was just... I had to bring that into it in addition to whatever my character was feeling, just like all that extra pressure, which I think made the play a lot stronger because you had one person coming in to like make those guys own up to themselves. And I just like, Sandy Shinner emailed me, or she called me or something, like, before she was casting the show, and we'd done the reading, and she was like, we'd like you to do this. Can you do this? And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing next year, but yes. Like, I had to do that. I felt very personally connected to it, and part of that is doing the reading beforehand and feeling like you're the first person to read those words on a page, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
But mostly just, like, that character was so strong, and mm-hmm. she was only 16, and she had to, like, to come and tell her dad to come home. And
yeah, it's like she feels betrayed by her dad in some way, or somehow abandoned, and yeah, and she's trying to get him back in her life.
And yeah, it's very complex and everything, blah blah blah. But it's also very simple. You know, she loves him and she needs him, but she's not going to say, "Dad, I need you." She's going to say, "Why the fuck aren't you coming home?" Mm-hmm. You know, basically. So. It's a inner battle between her and herself, you know, the entire time. And if she doesn't get what she wants, what is she going to do? And so it's this very strong character that has to, like, crumble at the end. And I always find that very moving.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and the crumbling, you're talking about emotional crumble. Yeah. When I saw Trust, the film, I did not see the theatrical, the stage version, but I saw the film, and mm-hmm. I was in the theater with Roger Ebert, a few other people, and you could tell people were really getting emotionally involved
yeah.
in this thing, and it builds to a head in a way that is just so powerful. It's one of the few films in a while that I actually teared up at, and it's
good,
hard,
okay.
you know, when you really are getting, seeing so many things, but it really gets you invested in this girl, this Annie, 14 years old.
Good. Good, okay.
Who is, you know, she's followed by this, you know, internet predator. You know, she thinks it's just a friend online, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then it leads to, you know, her being raped, and then the mm-hmm. parents having to figure out, how to deal with it, how to emotionally deal mm-hmm. with this, how to help their daughter through this. And what's fascinating about Annie, and what's so real about Annie, I think, mm-hmm. is because she's dealing with so many feelings of confusion. It takes mm-hmm. a while for her to even register the fact mm-hmm. that a violation happened
totally.
Here, that something bad happened here.
Totally.
And I mean, I've just been kicking myself ever since. Because I wasn't even aware of the stage. I don't get
okay,
to
yeah.
see as much stage as I want to, but
sure.
I really want to do more.
Yeah.
And I was just seeing the reviews of this, and it sounded so powerful. And so I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. when you're getting to the mind of a 14-year-old, uh-huh. and you're still like early 20s now, uh-huh. you know. So, but I mean, still, like, when you're at that young age, every yeah. year feels almost like several years.
Absolutely.
Since the last one.
Absolutely.
So getting into a 14-year-old's mind, what was the challenge of that
for you? So fun. I find it really fun to play younger. I think there's this goofy energy that everyone has, and it, like, I've never had a problem, like, letting that out. And so I think that was the first thing that I, like, hopped to, was like, I'm gonna go kind of far with this, like, goofy, like, light skippy side of me, and, like, go there, and then I'll find, like, the nuances and the, like, the tics and tendencies that make me feel authentically 14.
Sure. Yeah.
Getting it in your body, I feel like. And actually, it was funny that on opening, there were like three openings, the critics, and then the gala thing for Looking Glass. And so at the gala party, I was like totally exhausted. but this woman came up to me and she was like, "Oh, Allison, like, I really enjoyed your performance, and like your character was so in your body, and your foot was like doing this thing." And I was like, "What do you mean?" She was like, "Your foot was tapping the whole time, or, you know, all that energy." I was like, "What?" I had no idea. And then I was like, maybe it's not good that I know that now, because now that I'm aware of it,
yes,
will I continue to, like, do that foot thing, or be like, now I have to tap my foot because that's what people like, you know? So it's the energy thing, and I forgot what I was going to say next.
Well, I think you brought up a good point there, because yeah. I recently talked to Greta Gerwig as well,
okay.
when she was on a press junket, and she was talking a similar sort of thing, where you don't want to be too aware of your body. Like,
yeah.
like, you want it to kind of naturally come through
yeah.
you, but you don't want to think too much, okay, I'm going to make my leg jiggle
exactly.
now.
Exactly,
like, that's
so bad.
I feel like that's
so
really a secret. Yeah.
yeah.
And that seems to be the best approach to just kind of,
yeah,
let, you know, channeling some of those nuances.
Yeah, and oh yeah, I know what I was going to say. You were mentioning the confusion aspect, and like
yeah.
how it takes a while to even register. We had talkbacks every night after the show, and
I was going
to
ask about
and
them,
I was
yeah.
there for a significant amount of them, and they were awesome and also challenging as an actor to, like, suddenly, like, leave the stage and just mm-hmm. be like, I just had this journey that my body thinks is completely real, and now I'm going to, like, talk to
yes.
people. It's very
strange.
Feel
it'd be very strange.
It's very strange. Yeah. But this woman, I think audiences like to project themselves onto characters, which is how they relate to them. And so this woman, a lot of people were crying a lot at the end of the show, and like, this happened to me a while ago and blah blah blah, and I haven't talked about it or thought about it, and it was like, it was amazing. And this one woman was saying, you know, I really think what your character really would have been doing instead of what you as an actress chose to do is this. And so she was kind of like giving me a note. And I was like, okay, All right. And so it was interesting. She was saying the character would be more in a trance or something, as I recall.
Hmm.
And at first I was just taken aback because I was like, I'm really tired and I don't really feel like getting
sure.
notes right now.
Exactly.
But like that was really early in the run, and like that really helped me.
Hmm.
I don't think it was during a preview. I think it was after opening. But it actually was amazing because I stopped playing this one scene, the scene where there's a scene where Annie, they check the computer and the parents are there and the FBI agent
yes,
is there.
Yes, and then they're calling the guy.
Yeah, and they call the guy and yeah. then he hangs up for something. He's like, Annie, huh, and then like mm-hmm. hangs up and everything.
He's aware that they're on the other line.
Yeah, and so he totally, kinda, yeah. he bolts and that's the last she hears from him. And I was playing that scene sort of like, oh God, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I changed that. That just totally changed. And I started playing it like, I don't know why this is happening, and I just want to talk to him, and he hasn't done anything wrong, and it was a really important shift
for
me.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. And I'm thinking, because that emotional arc is so powerful mm-hmm. in that film, and I'm sure in the play, from everything I've heard, and mm-hmm. it seems like with that, because I know the character so well from the film,
mm-hmm.
that for a while she is in a bit of a daze, it seems,
yeah.
or just a bit numb. I mean, I don't even
yeah.
know, like emotionally numb. Or she's still trying to.
Well, she's confused.
She's trying to
you
piece
know what
it
I mean?
Together.
She
exactly.
can't. She can't process it that fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that probably makes the transition even more. You know.
Yeah.
Like powerful. You know, when she finally opens up emotionally, and it's like an awakening
yeah.
almost.
Yeah. And again, in retrospect, I'm kind of like, yeah, totally. But like when I was doing
course.
It,
when
you
you're
know?
In there, totally. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. But no. But I've heard nothing but great stuff on that.
Oh,
and,
thank you.
Yeah. And well, just segging into The Wise Kids,
sure.
I have to mention this film. And I was telling you before this that, I mean, you shot this a while. What year was this when you shot it?
Summer 2010.
Summer 2010. Okay.
I think.
And it's played in the festivals. It's gotten, you know, really warmly received at these festivals.
Mm-hmm.
But it still hasn't gotten really like a proper release
totally,
yet. It still
yeah.
hasn't gotten that yet. So I still kind of want to, you know, egg people into seeing it, you
yeah.
know, or just keep the buzz going, because this mm-hmm. is a fabulous film. And I mean, I think it is like a film for 2012 in a way. Like, I really feel like if this film was part of the national conversation, I feel like it could change certain things around.
Oh,
because
my gosh.
Well,
and
just my opinion, because
yeah.
what Stephen Cohn, the director, the writer-director, does in this film.
And he acts in it.
And he acts in it. And for me, he's kind of like the fourth wise kid in a way,
mm-hmm.
because his character's a bit, you know, developmentally arrested, I guess,
yeah.
in some certain sense.
Mm-hmm.
But it revolves around these three kids in the southern, you know, small town, and they're very involved in their church, and like the pastor's daughter, you know, is starting to deal with some feelings of doubt, and that's very troubling to her friend, you know, played by you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more troubling to find out that your other friend, you know, played by Tyler Ross, that, you know, he is, you know, he's actually starting to, you know, acknowledge his homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least feel it. And he seems like one of the most certain people in the film. Like,
absolutely.
He seems kind of really sure that this is what he's feeling. And it's
yeah.
very troubling to you. And I mean, I've seen so many films. I mean, like Saved as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a fun.
I love that movie.
It's a really fun. I mean, yeah.
yeah,
it's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's something to be said for a film that doesn't caricaturize, you know, like the religious zealots. And of course,
yeah.
I mean, they kind of caricaturize themselves sometimes in the media, you know, where some people
mm-hmm.
go way over the top. But but I felt like in this film, it's not at all like a put down to people who are
yeah.
have a spiritual life. And in a way, I mean, it's like the gay character is one of the most spiritual. I mean, it hasn't really ruptured his faith, but
mm-hmm.
it's ruptured the faith of others. So I'm wondering,
yeah.
I mean, it's so fascinating. So what was that when you first read the script? What was your reaction to that?
Okay. My first reaction was, I should do this. I should do this if I get cast. So I read it. I was on my porch and I was listening to Like a Bird on a Wire. Wow, that's probably the wrong title. It's a Leonard Cohen song, but it's covered by Joe Bonamassa, who's like my favorite
oh, nice.
Rock blues artist. And it's an amazing song. And I was just listening to it on loop while I was reading The Wise Kids, like the fifth draft. And there was like a few more, let's just say, before shooting and everything.
Sure.
I just loved it. And it was just really good. And so I was like, yeah, I want to do this. It was just really good writing. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And when I read it, I was going into audition for Brie, actually, who's the one who...
Really? That's what
yeah.
I was wondering, if you
yeah.
had your eye on a particular
well,
character.
Well, it was only because my agent had said, you know, they want to see you for Brie. Read this script.
Sure.
And so I read it. When I read a script, if I have a part in mind, I'll read it with those lines.
Exactly.
I pay attention most to those lines, and I say them in my head, or I even say them out loud sometimes, just to see how it'll feel, I guess. And so I just loved it. It was amazing. And then when I auditioned the first time, it went well and everything. And then I got called back for Laura, who's, like you said, the one who's God-fearing and religious and spiritual. And also the description is blonde, very bouncy, you know, to a point of sort of like, you know, which is probably, I think, one of the lines in the movie, like, or something. And I was just, I literally called my agent and I was like, has there been a mistake? Because I think I was all right for Brie. She was like, nope, they want to see you for Laura. I was like, okay. And so I was doing Trust at the time. And so I came in for like four more auditions and four more callbacks. And yeah, it's funny. When I was, you know, filming it and all that, I just played Laura, you know, and then in retrospect, everyone can say like, oh yeah, wow, that part was so different before it was made. And, you know, in retrospect, you're not like that character in these ways, ABC, or how did you not play a stereotype? Or it's funny. It's like, I wasn't thinking about that when I was doing it,
exactly.
But I can totally ramble about it now. It's funny, you know?
Yeah. Well, because I think that's the tendency, and it's not even in the acting so much as even just the writing with a lot of these films that try to portray this conflict, and it's something that should be addressed and explored of, you know, people who are religious and gay, and, you know, how do you, you know, coexist in that community?
Yeah.
And I felt like what was great about this film was that your character, I mean, there's never really a moment where your character is being... I feel like she's just as empathetic as everyone.
That's great.
Or you feel as much empathy for her.
That's
as
fantastic.
Well.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, I mean, was there anything from your personal experience that you were drawing upon about that sort of person? Because I know people from, you know, growing up in a church, you know, people like that, you know.
No, I actually wasn't. I just went with my instincts about just like, how would I say these lines, I guess? And for some characters, that's the right choice. Some you have to like go really far and then, you know, come back. But for this one, I just... Like, sometimes I felt like, oh, you know, I felt very nervous as an actress. Like, am I going to do a good job, you know? But in terms of fighting a stereotype or anything, I don't really feel like I did that. I feel like they were, you know, well-written lines, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just, like, said them sort of. And I do love her, you know? I think about that character and I do love her. And she's real now, quote-unquote, you know, air quotes.
So what do you think is at the crux of that inner conflict for her? Because she still really cares for her friends, and it's really just more of that she just can't come to terms. It's a contradiction.
Well, she's a product of her environment, you know, and it's become so internalized that it's what she believes. And you know, I think one of the cool things for this doing this role has been really good for me, just as a person, not as an actress. As an actress, yes. But as a person and as an audience member in addition to that, because it makes me think like, well, you know, I humanized this person who based on my upbringing, I would have been like, no, you know, you don't have it right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I humanized that role, and that's our job as actors. And so it forces, I mean, one of my favorite things about this movie is that one of the essential questions that it asks is who would we be if we were born into a different family? And
yes,
I think that applies to much more than just religious upbringing or, you know, beliefs spiritually. And you can apply it to everything you can do. So it makes me think like, well, my quote-unquote open-mindedness or, you know, socially liberal point of view, that's a product of how I grew up as well. You know, so it's like if you're cutting someone off because they believe something, I guess one way to say it is don't take it so personally. They believe this because that's what their life experience brought them to. And so, I mean, that's what I aim to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the mature way to look at it. And so I try to do that. And I've really been opened up to that a lot more since I've humanized someone whose beliefs are like, they make me upset. Like, they make me really upset. Like, that a lot of people believe those things. And yet, what an amazing challenge to play someone who is so passionate at all.
Yes.
And also so passionate about something that you happen to be as passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more fun to play someone who believes things that are different from you than just like, yeah. You know, so like if I had played Brie, for example, I would have just been saying a lot of things that I think about and wonder and blah, 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 blah. You know, and my dad is not a preacher or pastor, but, you know, me and Brie, we have some of the same sort of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But Laura, what an amazing, awesome challenge to play someone who believes that strongly in something and that who I can like bring down to earth a little bit and just be like, I'm gonna infuse this with like conflict.
Yeah.
Or make her as real as I question these things. Mm-hmm. She's experiencing just a journey that is just as real for her. And so if I look at it that way, then I sort of bridge the gap between, oh, who believes this, who believes that.
Yeah. And it forces the audience to not dismiss her humanity. And especially audience people that are the most prone to dismissing it. And there's a wonderful scene in a restaurant. She's talking to this woman. And she's kind of, I don't know if she's challenging her on her faith necessarily, but she's kind of like, oh, you'll kind of grow out of that belief or something like that. And she's like, no, this is what I believe. Yeah. And it's not a scene that, I mean, she seems so powerful in that moment. And it gives you that conflict where you're like, well, I don't believe in this, but what a great thing that she's so, you know, she's so true to her religion. I mean, it really
gives
you that.
And it is a human thing. I mean, yes, I myself do not believe the same things religiously as Laura does, but I believe that strongly about a ton of things, and I question whether I should sometimes, and it's just I don't know, it's a really cool opportunity to play someone, and especially in the context of this really well-made film.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
this isn't just some tiny little opportunity that I get to be like, yeah, it was a good learning experience. Like, this is an amazing film, and it's really cool that I can just be like saying that and totally mean it, and it's, anyway. Thanks, Steven.
Well, totally. Oh, yeah, I'd love to talk to him, too. But he's the one that allowed me to see the film. And I hope more people get to see it, because I think that any film where each character can really hold on to their conviction, you know, of really who they are. I mean, really, at the end of the film, they're kind of the same as they were at the beginning. I mean, it's really just more of a process of discovery. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was so wonderful. There's no kind of contrived, like someone makes this huge shift in their beliefs.
Totally.
And it just kind of goes, you know, on autopilot. And I thought it's so important now, because I feel like we're so prone in this country to just kind of dismiss someone because of a, you know, opinion or a belief.
Absolutely.
And then never, never have any good conversation. Like, you can never connect on the shared humanity. It's always just about what are the political divides, social divides, cultural divides. And that's what art should do, is get you to relate to that next, you know, person.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's just fabulous. I mean, you've been working on so many other things, stuff in the stage. Hot L Baltimore was one, the Lanford Wilson piece at Steppenwolf, which must have been pretty exciting. Was that your first Steppenwolf? Because you understudied.
I did understudy there, and that's how I kind of got those people knowing a bit about who I was, just by like having the experience of, yes, I'm here and I'm going to get here on time almost every day, and all that. Those are some big dogs over there. They really know how to act, so that was a challenge, I will tell you. Yeah,
Did that feel like you were like raising the stakes in some way?
Oh my God, so intimidating. Oh my God, they're not screwing around. They're really, really good acting.
Totally.
Yeah. Oof.
I mean, because it seems like they have their own group of people, you know, the actors that they think of as part of the family. And does it feel like a very like inclusive environment when you're there? Do you feel like you're kind of working under the, you know, guidance of these people?
I felt a lot of pressure to like own it and like be like, wow, I have this like big role at a Steppenwolf show and I have to get there. And I mean, it was an incredible opportunity to be given to me at that time and at that age and everything. So, gosh, I feel, oh my gosh, I just, they're so good. Like, that's all I can say. They're so good over there. And, there's a lot to learn just by, like, being, they're always on. It's incredible.
They have their own brand. It's like, you know, when it's a Steppenwolf play.
Sure,
like
I never thought about that, actually. Yeah. I just, when you're on stage with those people, like, my God, they make it new every night. And that is something that I want to pride myself on, is the ability to do that. But also to get the beats you need to get and, you know, get your blocking every time. And all that stuff that's, like, you're not supposed to notice as the audience, all that stuff needs to be in place. And you also need to say it like it's the first time you've ever said it. You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
So it was an amazing challenge. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, and you also have another film that you've worked on. You have a supporting role, but it's still such an intriguing project, this Scrooge and Marley, where you play Franny, you know, so you know, the classic Dickens character, but there's a gay twist to it.
Absolutely it's a gay
Scrooge,
twist.
Scrooge is, you know, he's never really addressed these feelings before for Jacob Marley, but it seems like there is, you can even tell in the Dickens Dickens' work that there could have been something between those two men, because they're the most important person in each other's life.
And
in this
draft of this classic story, there certainly is something between them for sure. It's a very gay twist. The whole thing is a very gay twist. Yeah.
Well, and you have some great, I mean, people from the theater community as well.
Some
great comedy people. Richard Knight is one of the co-directors along with Peter Melville. Mm-hmm. And so, what kind of set does he create for the actors? Was it a bit of a freeing experience?
It was. Everyone is so humble and really, really hardworking, and that's the way it should be, you know. But it can't always be. And so it was just, you know, Richard is such a sweetheart, and it's just really nice. And he was like, he made me feel so appreciated, and that was really sweet. And yeah, I just got to like be a little role in this really amazing project. So.
It just looks really funny. It looks like a gas. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it too. I have no idea how it's going to turn out because I was in three scenes, so I was only on set for 2 days of shooting. So it's kind of like entering this project and then leave, you know, 3 days later. And so
yes,
it was great to work on. It was really great to work on.
Now, what do you think is next for you? Like ideally, I mean, because you've gotten the best of both worlds. You've gotten great experience on the stage and on film. You prove that you are adept in both of those.
Thank you.
Medium. So I'm just wondering, like at this young age, I mean, it's like what are you kind of looking at now?
I want to finish getting an education.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm doing that. I want to be in another movie really badly. I really do. I want to be on stage again really badly. I really do. And I'm also doing a lot of screenwriting myself. Actually, in the last year,
cool.
I've taken a lot of time to. DePaul has a film school. And it's really nice to be there because I've gotten to, like, I kind of, you know, I took a class in screenwriting like a year and a half ago or something, and then I kind of didn't anymore. But I had this like 80-page screenplay that he was like, write a 30-page screenplay, and I was like, great, minus 80 pages, okay, blah blah blah. So then I like got to take advanced screenwriting one, and I turned it into like a full-length thing, and I've been editing it, and I'm writing like two more, and I made some short films this quarter, and the second one is in post, and just like it's a whole new world that's opening up to me is like the writing side of it. And interestingly enough, I really do think it's teaching me how to be a better actor.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird. But it is. And so I want to get an education, and I want to do my own movies at some point, like make them. And because I like casting. I think that's really fun. I like writing. It's really hard and also fun.
And that makes complete sense, because when you're behind the camera, it really does teach you so much about that experience. Of,
yeah.
You know, working with the actor, what they need, what they're looking for.
Yeah, the thing is with writing is you can't get up there and not really know what you're doing. Like you have to actually have everything figured out, I feel. Especially structurally in screenwriting, its structure is so important. So it's making me realize, like as an actor, like you need to know what this moment means in the context of this story. You need to know exactly what you want right now, because as a writer, you have to have the entire world figured out and then you write or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do it, you know, somewhat at the same time, but the planning out of it and then executing the writing is kind of the formula. Feels. It resonates with me as an actor.
Sure.
It's teaching me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, it's clear your career is just taking off. We've just seen the beginning of it.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
So
thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And for all my recent reviews and interviews, you can visit HollywoodChicago.com. And be sure to look for Alison Torrum and Scrooge and Marley throughout this year and everything else she has in the pipeline. Alison Torrum, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That concludes today's episode of Indie Outlook. I'm your host, Matt Fagerholm, and I invite you to tune in next time for more coverage of the latest and greatest in modern independent cinema. Till then, I'll be on the lookout.